chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We've got some clips that we're going to be playing this evening, and I'm going to be making comments on those. And the first one is the press conference between Chancellor Merkel and President Trump. And this came, it was yesterday, and it was right at the White House. And it was very interesting in several ways. And then listen to this, and then I'll make some comments.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States and the Chancellor of the Federal Republic of Germany.
Thank you very much. Chancellor Merkel, it is a great honor to welcome you to the People's House, the White House. Our two nations share much in common, including our desire for security, prosperity, and peace. We just concluded a productive meeting with the German and American companies to discuss workforce development and vocational training. Very important words. Germany has done an incredible job training the employees and future employees and employing its manufacturing and industrial workforce. It's crucial that we provide our American workers with a really great employment outlook. And that includes making sure that we harness the full potential of women in our economy. My administration is in the process of rebuilding the American industrial base. A stronger America is in the interest, believe me, of the world as a whole. I reiterated to Chancellor Merkel my strong support for NATO, as well as the need for our NATO allies to pay their fair share for the cost of defense. Many nations owe vast sums of money from past years, and it is very unfair to the United States. These nations must pay what they owe. During our meeting, I thanked Chancellor Merkel for the German government's commitment to increase defense spending and work toward contributing at least 2% of GDP. I want to thank the Chancellor for her leadership in supporting NATO and its efforts in Afghanistan. This has come at significant cost, including the lives of over 50 German soldiers, whose sacrifice we greatly honor. I also appreciate Chancellor Merkel's leadership, along with the French president, to resolve the conflict in Ukraine, where we ideally seek a peaceful solution. Most importantly, our two countries must continue to work together to protect our people from radical Islamic terrorism and to defeat ISIS. I applaud Chancellor Merkel for Germany's contributions, both civilian and military, as a counter-ISIS coalition member. We also recognize that immigration security is national security. We must protect our citizens from those who seek to spread terrorism, extremism, and violence inside our borders. Immigration is a privilege, not a right. And the safety of our citizens must always come first, without question. Over lunch, the Chancellor and I will talk about our economic partnership. We must work together towards fair and reciprocal trade policies that benefit both of our peoples. Millions of hardworking U.S. citizens have been left behind by international commerce, and together we can shape a future where all of our citizens have a path to financial security. The United States will respect historic institutions, and we will also recognize the right of free people to manage their own destiny. The close friendship between America and Germany is built on our shared values. We cherish individual rights, we uphold the rule of law, and we seek peace among nations. Our alliance is a symbol of strength and cooperation to the world. It is the foundation of a very, very hopeful future. Thank you.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure and privilege to be here today in the White House together with President Donald Trump and have a first personal one-on-one meeting and an exchange of views. In the period leading up to this visit, I've always said it's much, much better to talk to one another and not about one another, and I think our conversation proved this. We talked about the international situation. We talked about also apprenticeship programs when we met with CEOs and apprentices around a round table. As regards the shared interests that we have, let me look back into the past. We, the Germans, owe a lot to the United States of America, particularly as regards the economic rise of Germany. This was primarily due to the help through the Marshall Plan. We were also able to regain German unity after decades of the United States standing up for this together with other allies and standing by our side during the period of the Cold War. And we are very gratified to know that today we can live in peace and freedom as a unified country due to that. So I was gratified to know that the President underlined how important he thinks NATO is. NATO is of prime importance for us, and it was not without very good reason that we said during our summit meeting in Wales that also Germany needs to increase its expenditure. We committed to this 2% goal until 2024. Last year we increased our defense spending by 8%, and we're going to work together again and again on this. And we said that obviously defense security has a lot of different assets and facets to it. On the one hand, it's supporting missions in Africa, for example. It's also promoting development assistance, but it's also helping missions in Africa, for example, in trying to stand up for their own safety and security. We continue to be in conversation. What was important for us today was that we were able to talk about Afghanistan, talk about what, as the President quite rightly said, the continuing mission of Germany in Afghanistan. I am very glad that the United States are intending to continue to commit to the Afghan mission as well. Together we fight against Islamist terrorism. Germany is going to step up its work and is going to continue its work in Afghanistan and also in Syria. We're going to monitor the situation there very closely. We're going to work on political solutions in Syria, but also in Libya, what we talked about. I am very gratified to know that the American administration and also the President personally commit themselves to the Minsk process. We need to come to a solution of this problem. There has to be a safe and secure solution for Ukraine, but the relationship with Russia has to be improved as well once the situation there on the ground background is clarified. Minsk is a good basis, but unfortunately we haven't made yet the headway that we want to, but we are going to work together with our experts in the next few months to come on this issue. I am also here in my capacity as G20 president. You know that we will be hosting the G20 summit this year, and I'm very pleased that the president has committed to attending this summit. We're going to talk at some length over lunch about the issues. We say trade has to be rendered fairer. There has to be a win-win situation. We can talk about the details of that. We've already seen today when we had an exchange with our CEOs and also with our apprentices what sort of potential we can tap, what sort of potential our two economies have. It's very moving to see, particularly meeting with these young people, what sort of work towards the future is being done by our companies there. So particularly in this period where we are transiting from traditional manufacturing to Industry 4.0, capacity building, skills are so important, incidentally, not only for young people, but also for those who maybe have lost their jobs and need to be reskilled in order to find a job again. And that is an issue I know is very important for you here in the United States, but it's also important for us in Germany. So I can say there are a number of issues where we will continue to cooperate very closely on the level of our experts, but also on our level. We had a very good first exchange of views, so I'm very much looking forward to the talks we will have over lunch. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll do a couple of questions. Mark Halpern.
Thank you. A lot of Americans now have anxiety, like 8 years ago, the government here debates what to do about health care. So I'm wondering if you can tell people what your bottom lines are, what's not in the race. You talked in the past about saying no one should be denied health insurance if they can't afford it. You talked about
The gentleman needs to use a microphone.
Are those just part of your bottom line? Would you veto any piece of legislation violated those? Madam Chancellor, back to you. President Trump's got a different style than some most recent past U.S. presidents. I'm wondering what you think of that style. Do you think it's good for the world, or do you have any reservations for that? Thank you both.
Thank you, Mark. We just have a really wonderful group of people meeting later. We met with 12 pretty much no's in Congress. You saw that a little while ago, and they went from all no's to all yeses. And we have a lot of yeses coming in. It's all coming together. We're going to have great health care. It's going to be passed, I believe, I think substantially and pretty quickly. It's coming together beautifully. You have the conservative groups. You have other groups. Everybody wants certain things. In the end, we're going to have a great health care plan. Now, I have to tell you that Obamacare is a disaster. It's failing. I was in Tennessee. We had a tremendous crowd the other night. And they have half of the state is uncovered. The insurance companies have left. And the other half has one insurance company, and that'll probably be bailing out pretty soon also. They have nobody. You have many states where they have one, and you have a lot of places now where they'll have none. Obamacare will fail. It will fold. It will close up very, very soon if something isn't done. I've often said politically the best thing I can do is absolutely nothing. Wait 1 year, and then even the Democrats will come say, please, please, you got to help us. But it's not the right thing to do for the people. We have a great plan. We have a plan that's getting more and more popular with the Republican base, with the conservative base, and with people generally. The press has covered it very inaccurately. People are truly covered well. And I think it's going to be something that's going to be a model to be looked upon. I'll tell you after we're finished.
Yeah, danke schön.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm here as Chancellor of the Federal Republic of Germany. I represent German interests. I speak with the President of the United States who, stands up for, as is right, American interests. That is our task, respectively. And I must say that I was very gratified to know the very warm and gracious hospitality with which I have been received here. We held a conversation where we were trying to address also those areas where we disagree, but to try to bring people together, try to show what is our vantage point, what is the American vantage point, and then try to find a compromise which is good for both sides, because we need to be fair with each other. Each and everyone is expecting for his or her leader that something good comes out of it for their own people. For Germany, I can say, well, people are different. people have different abilities, have different characteristics, traits of character, have different origins, have found their way into politics along different pathways, which that is diversity, which is good. Sometimes it's difficult to find compromises, but that's what we've been elected for. If everything just went like that without problem, well, you didn't need politicians to do these jobs. Mayor Stuntz, please. Christina Dunz from the German Press Agency. Madam Chancellor, given the experience of the GDR, you are always saying that you are so confident that walls can fall also. For how dangerous do you think this isolationist policy of the US president is, what with the import tariffs that he plans, and also with the fact that he doesn't think the EU doesn't deal with the EU in a very respectful way? And Mr. President, America first, don't you think that this is going to weaken also the European Union, and why are you so scared of diversity in the news and in the media, that you speak so often of fake news, and that things, after all, in the end cannot be proven, for example, the fact that you have been wiretapped by Mr. Obama?
Nice, friendly reporter. Well, first of all, I don't believe in an isolationist policy, but I also believe a policy of trade should be a fair policy. And the United States has been treated very, very unfairly by many countries over the years, and that's going to stop. But I'm not an isolationist. I'm a free trader, but I'm also a fair trader. And our free trade has led to a lot of bad things happening. You look at the deficits that we have, and you look at all of the accumulation of debt. We're a very powerful country. We're a very strong country. We'll soon be at a level that we perhaps have never been before. Our military is going to be strengthened. It's been depleted. But I am a trader. I am a fair trader. I am a trader that wants to see good for everybody worldwide. But I am not an isolationist by any stretch of the imagination. So I don't know what newspaper you're reading, but I guess that would be another example of, as you say, fake news.
Okay. Also, ich möchte es einfach mal so.
Well, allow me, if I may, to put it in the following terms. We haven't yet had time to talk at a great length about economic issues, but I would so say that the success of Germany in the economic area, but also on security and peace, that the success of Germans have always been one where the German success is one side of the coin, and the other side of the coin has been European unity and European integration. That's something of which I'm deeply convinced, and I'm not only saying this back home, I'm saying this here, I'm saying it in the United States and also here in Washington in my talks with the president. Secondly, I believe that globalization ought to be shaped in an open-minded way, but also in a very fair way. Freedom of movement within the European Union, for example, is a very important element of our economic progress, of peace, has been for many, many decades. The European countries for many, many centuries waged wars against each other. We have to protect our external borders because, and there we have to work in, on the basis of mutual interest with our neighbors. Migration, immigration, integration has to be worked on. Obviously, traffickers have to be stopped, but this has to be done by looking at the refugees as well, giving them opportunities to shape their own lives where they are, help countries who right now are not in an ability to do so, sometimes because they have civil war. I think that's the right way of going about it. And this is obviously what we have an exchange of views about. But my position is the one that I've just set out for you.
I might add that we have many plants and factories coming back into the United States. Many jobs are coming back to Michigan, to Ohio, to Pennsylvania, to a lot of places where they were losing jobs. And we will have a different policy. But it's going to be a great policy for not only the United States, but a great policy worldwide. And I look very much forward to it. Kevin Cerulli.
Yes, Mr. President. What exactly, sir, do you think would be about the Republican Party?
Well, Kevin, I think we have a very unified Republican Party. After all, we have the presidency, we have the House, we have the Senate, and we're getting along very well, I will tell you. And if you would have were at the meeting that I just attended, where we took 12 no's or semi-no's, no yeses, and within a short period of time, everybody was very much on board and a commitment to vote yes. I think we have a very unified party. I think actually more unified than even the election. You see, when they talk about me, I seem to be very popular, at least this week, within the party, because we have our highest numbers, the highest numbers that I've ever had in the party. So I think there's a great unification. Healthcare is a very, very difficult subject. It's a very complex subject, and it's a subject that, you know, goes both ways. You do something for one side, and the other side doesn't like it. But it's really something that's come together very well, and I think it's going to be very, very popular, extremely popular. On trade with Germany, I think we're going to do fantastically well. Right now, I would say that the negotiators for Germany have done a far better job than the negotiators for the United States. But hopefully we can even it out. We don't want victory. We want fairness. All I want is fairness. Germany's done very well in its trade deals with the United States, and I give them credit for it. But, and I can speak to many other countries. When you look at China, you look at virtually any country that we do business with, it's not exactly what you call good for our workers. I mean, you look at the horrible NAFTA transaction. NAFTA has been a disaster for the United States. It's been a disaster for companies, and in particular, it's been a disaster for the workers. A lot of the companies just moved. But the workers are screwed. It's probably the reason I'm standing here. Maybe number one, that, and maybe the military. Building up our military, which we will do, and we will be stronger than ever before, and hopefully not have to use it. But we will be stronger, and perhaps far stronger than ever before. But it's probably the reason I'm here, is when you talk about trade. So I think that we are going to be a very different country. I think we're going to have great values. But in terms of our military, it's going to be much stronger. And our trade deals are going to be good, solid deals, not deals that lead to closing plants and tremendous unemployment. Okay? Thank you.
Then via über Handelsabkommen.
When we speak about trade agreements, then the European Union is negotiating those agreements for all of the member states of the European Union. But obviously there's also input by the member states. They bring to the table what's important to them. We have underlined as German industry, German business community, and have made the experience that any kind of agreement that we have concluded, for example, at the very latest with South Korea, brought us more jobs, actually. People were very much concerned about losing jobs, for example, the automotive industry, but in the end it turned out, particularly as regards South Korea, in the end it turned out that both sides benefited. And I think it's only fair. That's the purpose of concluding agreements, that both sides win. And that is the sort of spirit, I think, in which we ought to be guided in negotiating any agreement between the United States of America and the EU. I hope that we can resume the agreement that we started. We have just now concluded our agreement with Canada, and I hope that we will come back to the table and talk about the agreement between EU and the US again. Mr. Graf, please. Thank you, Ansgar Graf from Die Welt. Madam Chancellor, a question addressed to you. Today we're talking about a trade. The President in the past always said that he doesn't like multilateral trade agreements but prefers bilateral trade agreements. Do you think from the EU's point of view TTIP is a bilateral agreement with Washington on one side, the EU on the other side? Now, is the problem that America, the President of the United States and the Europeans have a basically different understanding of what the EU is all about? That's my question addressed to you. And Mr. President, my question addressed to you, if I may.
rejected White House claims that the alleged wiretapping on you, on the Trump Tower, on Trump Organization, or on members of your campaign was that British intelligence was either responsible for it or involved in it. After these claims are rejected, what is your take on that? Are there other suspects, or do you think it was a mistake to blame British intelligence for this? And by the way, my second question, are there from time to time tweets that you regret in hindsight?
Very seldom. We have a tremendous group of people that listen, and I can get around the media when the media doesn't tell the truth, so I like that. As far as wiretapping, I guess, by, you know, this past administration, at least we have something in common, perhaps. And just to finish your question, we said nothing. All we did was quote a certain very talented legal mind who was the one responsible for saying that on television. I didn't make an opinion on it. That was a statement made by a very talented lawyer on Fox. And so you shouldn't be talking to me. You should be talking to Fox. Okay?
Thank you.
Ja, ich glaube, dass der Präsident...
Well, I believe that the President has clearly set out his philosophy as to what trade agreements have to bring about for the American side as well. I personally don't think that Germany needs to negotiate and not the European Union. We've devolved our competences to the European Union, so the European Union, or rather the Commission, negotiates on behalf of the Member States, so that's not going to prevent us from concluding agreements. For me, indeed, this would be then qualify as a bilateral agreement between the EU and the United States if we had it. But the question is, will it be of benefit to both countries or not? And let me be very honest, very candid. A free trade agreement with the United States of America has not always been all that popular in Germany either. There have been less demonstrations against this free trade agreement in the United States than in Europe and also in Germany. So I am very glad to note that apparently the sort of perspective on that has changed a little bit, at least in Germany too.
Thank you very much. Great honor. Thank you.
It wasn't a very welcoming type of relationship. There were misreportings, or maybe they didn't shake hands when they should have, or they did shake hands initially. So you had the press in there doing their normal disruptive things. But anyway, getting back to this press conference that we just listened to, there were several important things said during the press conference. And one of the main things was that Chancellor Merkel maintained that there would not be any bilateral trade agreement, that their trade agreement would be coming through the European Union, say, with the United States, but not directly between Germany and the United States. Trump had some really dynamic things to say. He said that we're rebuilding our industrial base, that countries and companies are coming back and bringing back to the United States jobs and so forth. But also, he was asked a very pointed question about being an isolationist and so forth, and about wiretapping. And what he had to say about being an isolationist was that he believes in free trade and open trade, but fair trade. And so then he nailed the reporter from Germany in the fact that this isolationist deal got rankled him a little bit. And he began to describe that at the end of his response to those questions, series of questions, as maybe that part of it was fake news, see. So he wasn't very, very happy about that particular question. And it's interesting that at one time he discussed that that what Chancellor Merkel and him had in common was wiretapping or interception by NSA or other, you know, like government communications headquarters type out of Great Britain. So he brought that up. But I'm going to play another clip here in a second of a discussion that I had with Duncan Campbell, and he's an authority in England on interception and wiretapping, things like that, out of the UK. So want to listen to that next, then we'll make some more further comments. Got a very special guest on the line from UK, and Duncan Campbell, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon.
Well, I'll tell you what, you really have become an expert in the interception area as such, and there's issues that have just arisen here in the United States, and previous, also Merkel was wiretapped, or what they call intercepted also. But what would be some of your comments about what's going on these interception issues?
Well, in modern communications, everybody gets to spy on everybody, because the digital signals that take telephone or other calls pass through cables or pass over satellites that many, many nations try to listen into. So they have different legal regimes. But if you take a situation where a politically important person in the United States has a call to somebody in Russia, then you're going to have potentially the FBI being interested because it's a Russian entity that's being communicated with. They'll have to observe very special rules about American citizens. As soon as that call passes through the cables, British intelligence will pick it up automatically and store it. What they do with it's a different question. It may pass through France, same things happen. It may pass through Germany, same things happen. And then when you get to Russia, the Russian foreign intelligence signals will do exactly the same. So, you know, an international call, including this one on Skype.
Right,
is
exactly.
It's like having an audience already. You think you're the only one talking to me right now before your readers get to listen to us, but maybe that's not true at all. And always the possibility that even if nobody's not listening right now, and I don't think anybody is listening right now, little switches may be going in different computers according to target lists saying, hey, this person's of interest, or that person's of interest, put it in the file. All completely automatic. And they try and keep that these things don't matter.
Yeah, you're probably familiar. I was in the Army Security Agency in the 60s in West Berlin, okay? And so I have some knowledge of what you're talking. What's that?
Did you serve in Teufelsberg?
I was on top of Teufelsberg, yes, sir. That's right. and I spent a year up there.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, right next door was a GCHQ, okay? They had sort of like a hut next door to us, and we had a pretty large operation in 1965 when I was there. But I know what you're talking about to a certain degree. I've been away from that for 50 years, see what I mean? But I do know about Men with Hill and things like that, and I noticed much of your research over the years has been on subjects like that.
Yes, well, Menwith Hill it's a Menwith Hill very big listening station in Britain, and it had just got going at the time of your service at the height of the Cold War. And Teufelsberg, yeah, I mean, this is German for the Devil's Mountain. You know it, I know it. Your listeners may not, unless they were like you in that bit of the secret part of the army service, but you were listening down the throat of then communist occupied East Germany. One of the funniest stories I ever heard, a good friend, a source of mine who was in British intelligence and was in units that actually went spying inside East Germany. And I happened to be with him on occasion when he met an American colleague who'd been in Teufelsberg, and they'd been using the facilities to listen in to British troops and spies messing around in Eastern Germany, spying on the Eastern Germans, that everybody was listening. It was a crazy time.
Right, right. The Teufelsberg was a pile of rubble that wound up well over 300 feet tall that was hauled out of post-World War II Berlin that was bombed pretty heavily. And so it was the highest point, a man-made point, in Berlin, in the Berlin area.
Yes.
So we were up there. One of the most important things, Duncan, that I've ever experienced was we had some antennas inside. We had an inflatable dome at the time while I was there, and we started building geodesic later. But the one main operations that we had up above the four wings was an inflatable NORAD dome. But at night, I would go out and adjust some of the antennas we had out around outside the building. Yeah. And I could see like 7 and 8 miles where the wall was, and we'd see flares go off up and down the wall, people trying to escape out of East Berlin.
Yes.
It was quite a poignant experience for me, and I was like 21, 22 years old at the time, you know.
Yeah. And then when Berlin got unified, the center, which was demolished, which when you know was demolished in the war, when you were serving, and I visited Berlin and as a student and went through the checkpoints. And
okay.
That whole area has now become a new cockpit of spying, because on the one hand you have Germany, the Bundestag is back in business, Chancellor Merkel has a posh new offices. The German intelligence are building huge new offices, but just where Hitler used to have his bunker, the new American embassy, and beside it the new British embassy, are in listening range of all the German government offices, and they've all got, not inflatable domes, but it's almost, in the case of the British, electronic listening stations to spy on West Germany, sitting in the middle of Berlin.
Right.
In plain view.
In fact, yeah, the U.S. Embassy is within sight of the Reichstag, I think, you know, I haven't been there lately, so I'm just looking at maps. And
the Bundestag, we call it these days.
Bundestag, I'm sorry. When I was there, it was the Reichstag in ruins, and it was right inside of East Berlin, so we couldn't go over there. But there was an interesting British, the British were guarding the Russian War Memorial people.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean?
There were a lot of intrigue and you know, cross currents there. Very interesting.
So, I mean, what we've got here is there's a lot of conspiracy. Now, I'm afraid many of your readers, I don't know, listeners, I'm sorry, may be supporters of the president. I'm not in that camp. I listen to everything carefully, but I think the allegation, the circumstances of the allegation against the British is a bit of a distraction. But, I mean, there is core truth to it in the sense that there will be automatic listening. So it doesn't just apply to whether you work for Donald Trump or generally, Blythe, if you work for General Motors or you work for the vegetable company in Texas. If you're making a call that's going to Russia, you can be certain people are listening in. And the question, therefore, is not whether they listened in and maybe made a recording. It's a question of who got it. Was anything done? So there's many gaps there, but you know from your own experience, and you're right, that what people think is safe and secure often isn't.
Right. One of the ideas that I've ran across over the years, I can't confirm this with personal knowledge, but I've read articles that someone came up at the Men with Hill. Well, why don't we just record everything? See what I mean?
No.
They started recording everything that went through those lines. See? Yeah.
No. Your information here is actually very well sourced. It's actually in a particular document that Edward Snowden, formerly, one of the documents he leaked for Men with Hill, says that, and. The document is, you can get it on the internet, you can get it from the website of The Intercept magazine in New York. It has those words in it. It was the then NSA director who said them. And he meant it. He wasn't talking about the cable. I don't think he was talking about the cables. They spy on a lot of satellites from Men with Hill. something like 40 or 50 satellites that carry regular people's communications are spied on from there. And he was saying, why do we have to throw stuff away? Why can't we just record everybody? And, you know.
Right, like, they started doing it, yeah.
To people like me and maybe to people like you, the answer is, listen, you idiot. That's what we fought against in the 40s and 50s. That's why people like you, my friend in Austin, were stationed in Berlin, you know.
Right.
Because
during the Cold War, there was real, you know, black and white. I mean, we really had people trying to get out of East Berlin to freedom.
Yes.
And they were shooting people along that wall. I mean, you know. So it was a real struggle, you know.
Yeah. And I know. I've been to the museums of the Stasi, the East German secret police. They are incredibly moving and disturbing places. They serve as a grim warning to these kinds of surveillance. I'm going to have to say goodbye to you in Texas just now.
Well,
because
Duncan Campbell, thank you for this interview, and let's get back on some extended interviews whenever it's convenient, okay?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. The point I want to make after listening to this clip is Duncan Campbell has written extensively about interception, wiretapping, and so forth of communication throughout the world. And I didn't have but 10 minutes with just what you listened to. But basically, they are collecting information that goes through the UK, whether it's satellite from in orbit, or big trunk lines coming in across the Atlantic, or other communications in the European Union or whatever that go through there. These are international calls and stuff we're talking about. So basically, the propensity for them to pick up much of this, go in and read some articles that are up on our site. So go to The Secret Truth, and you'll find a series of articles out of The Guardian primarily that talk about Men with Heal and the capability that has. And it has the ability and the capability to listen in on any of the Americans at any time. In fact, the idea of let's just record it all came out of Men with Heal years ago. But anyway, so go in and listen and read those articles and listen to this. This will be on demand, so you can listen to it several times. Okay, the next clip we have is an interview done by Alex Jones with Jerome Corsi about the healthcare transfer. They think that it was improper and illegally done by Obama from Ginny Mae and other financial organizations to cover his shortfall on Obamacare. But listen to that now.
Dr. Corsi, I know I want to get you back to your writing and your work and everything that's happening as you form the D.C. Bureau there in D.C., but this new story's big, but what do you make of the all-out fake news attack on myself and Trump?
Well, it's going to continue. I mean, it's also going on Roger Stone. Been writing about that all day.
Oh, he's a Russian agent, yeah.
He's a Russian agent. The Democrats are just in denial. The ones who were close to Putin were Hillary and Podesta, both of whom were getting paid by them, by the Russians.
And that's all come out. But what I'm asking you is, I've never seen the media and the system allow mainstream people to say kill Trump everywhere and organize. This is organized crime. If I was saying this about Obama, I should be arrested. I never called for violence against Obama. This is wrong. They just can't keep doing this.
It is very shocking. I mean, if anyone had ever said this about President Obama, you'd have Secret Service knocking on your door that afternoon. But of course, now that the mainstream media and these artists are out there saying outrageous things of violence they're going to do to the president, it's just considered to be normal. I mean, it's shocking, and the Secret Service needs.
They've taken our restraint for weakness.
Well, and also, the attacks are intensifying because the stakes are now so high. The left knows it lost. Hillary lost catastrophically.
I want the gloves off on Snoop Dogg. I want the gloves off. Go ahead.
You should have them. And I mean, I do want to cover what we've got in this article today.
No, I know it's big. This is why they're trying to block us, because they want to ignore the huge stories you and others are putting out that are absolutely groundbreaking. You put this out almost 2 weeks ago. Now, new Treasury docs have confirmed your analysis. And again, you got a Harvard degree. You're a top finance expert. Go ahead.
I worked with a an expert from who was an outside editor, auditor for Freddie. We went through the Treasury annual reports and could document where the money was taken from the investors from Freddie and Fannie, the two large mortgage giants. The Treasury put it into the to their general fund, and then we watched the accounting. We did an Excel chart, which shows exactly how the money was diverted into health and Medicare, and the dollar flows are dramatically a pattern that confirms when the money was taken out of Fannie and Freddie, Treasury shuffled it off into this commerce and housing, and then it ends up in their line items for expenditures and health and Medicare.
And I've looked at the federal law, you've covered it, it's totally illegal.
Totally illegal. And this also proves, and why it's so important right now.
It's time for all these gangster thugs of the Democratic Party that want to fight. It's time they start getting one. Of course, they'll just blow up a school and say we did it. No, I mean it's time politically for them to get their asses indicted for this and everything else.
This shows, Alex, that Obamacare was bankrupt. And if the Obama administration had not illegally taken money that
looted,
was never appropriated for this
looted
purpose, looted it, and robbed the investors. I mean, there's lawsuits on this. The investors were – this is the biggest theft of corporate dividends in U.S. financial history.
Which is also meant to blow up. We know he was always an enemy of this investment because it was actually government doing good for people and actually creating wealth. So Obama spent his 8 years trying to destroy it. Why is that?
Well, and this is a whole income shifting to the low income. This is what Obamacare
because
was
the elites
about.
Want renters. They admit that. Goldman Sachs admits they don't want Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They don't want homeownership.
That's right. And they want the whole purpose behind this is Obama had a war on against middle class home ownership. He wanted to change the United States from a homeowner's American dream
to renter,
own your own home, into well housed nation of renters like Europe. And the only subsidies would have been to the low income
to coffin apartments
buyers. And that's in the Treasury documents. We have that fully disclosed. And this is all ironclad. I mean, if you take a look at the article today, it's a very detailed financial analysis of the Treasury Department's own annual reports and their own accounting that documents where the money went into and from the investors stolen from Fannie and Freddie, shifted into Obamacare to keep Obamacare from going bankrupt. It's a huge story. And by the way, I wrote this article today because the Washington Examiner doubted that we could do this analysis. And I want to show the Washington Examiner that they're the ones who are wrong. They're the ones who didn't know how to read the financials of the Treasury Department. And Maria Bartiromo has picked this up on Fox Business and has started making it a major issue. One of her largest tweets ever, she did it on Friday, and this issue is now going viral.
And let's be clear. See, we don't operate like other news organizations. I call up and get guests on all the time to promote their website, their news organization. They go, oh, the owner says, I'm not going to name names, we're not supposed to go on your show now. And I'm like, do you understand? We're trying to win the war. Our platform in this case is like 20 times bigger conservatively. They go, no, we know that. They don't get it. We want people to come on. When you write these articles, you give, I told you, but you agree with me. It was your, you go to these meetings, you give them your research that you're doing with your White House sources, and they just can't even believe that someone else is giving them the scoop. We want to defeat them. We don't care about having our article read more than yours. Of course, he's already had three number one New York Times sellers. I've already got the biggest political talk show, even bigger than Limbaugh now overall. I'm not trying to be the biggest guy. Drudge is 10 times bigger with overall click. I love that. I want to defeat them. Understand that. We have to work together. But that's one big problem in conservative libertarian media. Even with stuff super hardcore, you go to people's sites, it's all their stuff. And then not, never ours or theirs. You go to InfoWars, it's everybody's stuff. I mean, don't people get we're in a total battle here? Every ounce of our energy matters. It's got to be directed downstream in the war at the enemy.
What we've got here, Alex, is this is the Treasury Department's own financial analysis.
You have their own internal documents, huge bombshell. Exactly.
And you know, we're guided through this by one of the former auditors from Freddie. The documents have come to us through the White House sources. You know, we're tipped off on
this. And this could destroy Obama and all these criminals. This is bigger than the Haiti scam by an order of, what, 100 times. Haiti's $2 billion. This is $200 billion. And by the way, I notice you've only gotten a few years of it. You've got 2 years of the 8 years. It's much worse.
Yes, it goes ultimately $260 billion. It's the biggest theft of a dividend, a private corporate dividend in U.S. corporate
history. So then the way to phrase this to break it out is Obama did secret bail-in raiding private investments to fund his programs. So that's it. Just like Greece did, just like what's the other island, Cyprus did. This Obama did a bail-in, secret Obama bail-in discovered. There's your headline.
You're right. And also the subheadline is Obama was happy to throw middle class homeowners to the dogs. He was going to end the 30-year mortgage, which is a key mortgage that gets people into their first homes. It has for decades. And Obama, the documents we have where they internally discussed eliminating, closing Freddie and Fannie, they admit that they're going to do detriment to the middle-class homeowners market. They're going to make homeownership more expensive in America, and the Obama administration doesn't care.
Well, I want to invite you on the nightly news tonight to do a 15-minute report. Roll through the documents.
This next clip is an excellent report on Fox about a Director Comey possibly being fired because of conducting, it looks like he had, and he was conducting investigations both on the Trump campaign and on Hillary Clinton's campaign at the same time. We don't know that yet. Director Comey will testify before Congress Monday, Congress, and there'll be more coming out at that time. But listen to this clip, and you'll see. And then I'll make some additional comments.
The House Intelligence Committee demanding answers by today. They want to know if there's any hard evidence to support President Trump's claim that President Obama had his phones tapped before Election Day.
First of all, is there information to be produced is one question. But more than that, we're going to have an open hearing on March 20th. We're going to be able to ask the director of the FBI, among others, is there any truth to this? Have they seen any evidence of this? They would be in a position to have to know. And I think on March 20th, if not before, we'll be able to put this to rest.
Michael Goodwin is a New York Post columnist and Fox News contributor and has written a lot about the man at the center of this, FBI Director Jim Comey. He will be in the hot seat. We believe at least part of this hearing will be public for him next week. Do you think he's enjoying being in the spotlight?
I'm afraid he does, though I'm not sure he likes the glare that he's getting lately. Look, when we look back, Shannon, one of the most remarkable things in American history will be that during the 2016 election, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were under some kind of FBI investigation or surveillance. Lots of stories, we know about the Clinton case, for example, but lots of stories have been written, including one that's in the New York Times, which said there were wiretaps on Trump associates. So something clearly was going on. The Flynn call was intercepted. The Michael Flynn call was intercepted with a Russian ambassador. Somebody knew that Jeff Sessions had met twice with the Russian ambassador despite his denial in this congressional confirmation. So something went on in both campaigns led by presumably the FBI, perhaps the CIA, others in the intelligence community. I think Jim Comey has a lot of explaining to do.
Well, you think he is, if not one of the most powerful FBI directors in our history.
Well, look, I mean, just that example that he had both presidential candidates under some kind of investigation at the same time. As they're battling for the White House, they're also battling him. That's extraordinary. I call him in my piece J. Edgar Comey. He had at least, if not more, power than J. Edgar Hoover. And, you know, the Hoover example, I think, is instructive, too. Hoover stayed too long. Five presidents confessed secretly that they wanted to fire him but were afraid to. Harry Truman accused him of blackmail and yet wouldn't fire him. He died in office. Richard Nixon named the building after him. It's the building that Jim Comey goes to work in every day. So I do think there is a sense of these guys being above the law themselves, being unaccountable to anybody. This 10-year term, Comey said, you're stuck with me. He doesn't intend to leave. I mean, that's an incredibly brazen thing to do. And then last week, when President Trump said that he had been wiretapped, Comey apparently went around the FBI and Justice Department demanding the Justice Department issue a denial. We only know that because Comey leaked it, or someone close to Comey. Everybody had the story that Comey was furious, incredulous, he had to stand up to Trump. I mean, who rebukes the President of the United States that way, off the record, and gets away with it? That's a mighty big move, and I think there's somebody there with a lot of power that is no longer accountable.
So where do you see this matchup, if it comes to a head between President Trump and the FBI director? How does that play out? Because you mentioned J. Edgar Hoover and five presidents wanting to get rid of him, but being afraid, and certainly if there are hints or confirmations that you as the president or those close to you are under some type of FBI investigation, not the best time from a PR stance to be getting rid of the FBI director.
But that goes directly to the point. I mean, should a president of the United States be afraid to fire an FBI director because the FBI director will spill the beans? I mean, that's an incredible moment. I mean, talk about blackmail opportunities. Mm-hmm. Talk about unaccountable power. I mean, I think that is what's wrong with this whole situation with the FBI, where there are so many leaks about investigations that are never put on the record. Nobody is ever held accountable. Did you ever hear of an FBI agent getting fired for leaking? So all of these things, much of this is classified material that gets leaked. How do we know that Donald Trump's campaign was wiretapped, that associates were wiretapped? Only through leaks.
What is being reported here is that there were leaks. There was a January 20th article in the New York Times stating in there that there were wiretaps or interception going on of Trump and others, and it tried to discredit him at that time. But there had been a multitude of leaks about the different angles on this wiretapping controversy. And so what Fox is reporting, that yes, these leaks are going to culminate in a cross-examination of Director Comey Monday by Congress, and anything could happen, and he might be fired. But anyway, coming up next is going to be a clip John McCain spoke out on the floor of the Senate and castigated Ron Paul, called him. He said he accused him of working for Putin, and I'm afraid that John McCain's time has come and gone. He needs to retire. He did not bring our POWs home. He did not do the right thing, and neither did John Kerry. And John McCain sat on a committee in 1992 and didn't bring our people home. So what they did was despicable. But anyway, listen to this accusation from John McCain.
If there is objection, and I note the senator from Kentucky on the floor, I will say before I read this, if there is objection, you are achieving the objectives of Vladimir Putin. You're achieving the objectives of trying to dismember this small country that has already been the subject of attempted coup. I have no idea why anyone would object to this, except that I will say, if they object, they are now carrying out the desires and ambitions of Vladimir Putin, and I do not say that lightly. So, Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent that at a time to be determined by the majority leader in consultation with the Democratic leader of the Senate, proceed to executive session to consider calendar number 1, Montenegro Treaty Document 11-114-12, that the treaty be considered as having advanced through the various parliamentary steps of stages up to and including the presentation of the resolution of ratification, that any committee declarations be agreed to as applicable, that there be no amendments in order to the treaty or the resolution of ratification, that there be 2 hours for debate, equally divided in the usual form. Upon the use of yielding back of time, the Senate proceed to vote on the resolution, that any statements be printed in the record as if read, that if the resolution of ratification is agreed to, the motion to reconsider be considered, made, and laid upon the table, that the President be immediately notified of the Senate's action, that if the resolution is not agreed to, the treaty will be returned to the calendar, and that there be no motions or point of order in order, then a motion to reconsider, and then the Senate then resume legislative session.
Mr. President. Senator from Kentucky.
I object.
Objection is heard.
Mr. President, I note the senator from Kentucky leaving the floor without justification or any rationale for the action that he has just taken. That is really remarkable, that a senator blocking a treaty that is supported by the overwhelming number, perhaps 98 at least, of his colleagues, come to the and object and walk away. And walk away. The only conclusion you can draw when he walks away is he has no argument to be made. He has no justification for his objection to having a small nation be part of NATO that is under assault from the Russians. So I repeat again, the senator from Kentucky is now working for Vladimir Putin. I yield the floor.